Blog Talk Radio.
Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Good morning. It's the 23rd day of January 2010, and today's topic is illegal immigration. So far, it's estimated that over 12 million illegal immigrants are living in the country already, and that number is going up by the millions every year. Some people think of this as an invasion just by the sheer numbers alone, and believe that we should have open borders and offer amnesty to those that are already here. Everybody has their thoughts on this issue, and you're welcome to join us by calling our listener line at 646-721-9887 or join us in our chat room, which is now open at www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. You can also email us now at talk@KRBNradio.com. My name is Robin, and I'd like to introduce my co-host, Cliff. Good morning, Cliff. So what's your opinion on this immigration as you see it?
Good morning, Robin, and I find it interesting that you mentioned my name first in the introduction. Wow.
Don't complain. You get top billing. Oh,
really? Really? Isn't that neat? Anyway, it's really interesting. I don't know, 12 million? Isn't that an extremely small number? I thought it was like a lot more than that, but maybe not. I mean, depending on how many of these sites are in the United States, we got, what, almost 300 million people now that live here.
Right.
So. But I find it interesting that I just heard recently about a TPS. Do you know what a TPS is?
No, I don't.
I know, it's a TP.
No,
it's just thought of it. It's temporary. Basically, it's allowing people temporary. All right, I've got a mind block against what I want to say here for some reason or other. But I didn't realize, I mean, we're doing this now for temporary protected status is what it is. I'll get it out.
Okay.
For the Haitians, okay? But I didn't realize, and I heard this morning, and they were talking about it on the news this morning, and talking about giving them temporary status. It's only for like 18 months is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there is actually a thing in the immigration rules, I guess, whatever you want to call them, that talks about temporary protected status. And we have temporary protected status for a lot of people, and I did not know that until just this morning, as a matter of fact. And there's a whole website, as a matter of fact, that you can go to if you want to go to. It's are you ready for this? It's long, so you're going to have to write it down, or
okay.
You can remember. Reforming Immigration America. For America, excuse me. Reforming Immigration for America. I have trouble reading things that are all one word, and that's all one word. Mm-hmm. Reforming Immigration for America.org is the site you can go to, and they've also got a click to call, so if you want to call one of your representatives and complain one way or the other, or however you want to put it, you can do that too at that particular point. So the thing is, nothing's going to happen until we do something about it, until we all start complaining or screaming or hollering. Nothing is going to happen. But
right.
They expect 200,000 undocumented Haitian immigrants in the United States right now from this whole thing.
Now, was this created because of the disaster over in Haiti?
No, that's what I'm saying. This TPS thing has been around for years, and I didn't even know about it. This is something that's not just for Haiti. It's for, I mean, they're invoking it right now for the Haitians, but it's been around for years. There are several different groups of people that are using it already, and
mm-hmm.
And it was a new one for me. I didn't ever hear about it before. But hey, they're expecting a lot of people here from Haiti. Thing is, well, you know, my question is, would we actually be better off if we spent the same amount of money that we would be spending on immigrating these people in or doing whatever and building a community in Haiti? I mean, we're going to have to rebuild part of the well, it's not just, I guess there's more than just one, it's not a little town, it's like 3 million people. That's not a little town.
Uh-huh.
But we need to rebuild, what do I want to say? At least, see, I don't know. I'm sitting here, I was going to say we should build a temporary town beside it until we can get the main town rebuilt. But that would be a lot of waste, too. I don't know.
Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, they are obviously in need of temporary housing over there, and depending on how you build it, it could become permanent housing. Because it's not going to be, like with Katrina over here, it's not going to be fixed overnight.
Well, they're talking about fixing this rebuilding this city in an unprecedented short period of time, somehow or another. I mean, you realize that our whole Gulf thing is still not fixed. And how many years ago was Katrina?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Have you ever noticed any government contract getting fixed quickly? That's
another story. I don't know that this is a government contract either. I mean, this is not just us doing this. There's a whole lot of people doing it. So, is that somebody that just came on the phone line there? Yes.
Yes. No.
Should we see who it is?
Yeah, let's go to the phones and we'll welcome our caller.
Good morning.
Right here. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm Tom.
I assume.
Hey, go ahead.
I assume that you have opinions.
Oh, you know me. I'm opinionated. Cliff and I worked together for several years. At any rate, this whole thing with the temporary protective status, is that what you said that was, Cliff?
That's what it's called, yes.
Yeah, okay. You're right, that has been around for a long time. The Mexicans have used it. The Haitians are now using it. Oh, I don't know who all has used it. I think there are years... How many years back does that go? Do you have any idea?
Well, it's 15. I mean, I didn't look to see exactly what it is, but there are people that have been doing this for many years, and there are about eight different groups of people, and I don't have the list up in front of me, but there are about eight different groups of people that are taking advantage of this right now.
Okay. I was thinking back to way back when the Irish, when they immigrated over here like crazy. I wondered if...
Well, of course, I don't believe that was... I don't believe that was temporary. We were letting them in at that particular point. Somehow or another, that worked out okay, I think.
Yeah, sure did.
I'm pausing here because we've got this delay in the telephone and us. We've got like a 3-second delay, it sounds like. So we've got to learn how to be network news people here somehow.
Yeah, I do have on the screen here what the requirements are for the temporary protection status, and you can see that at the www.uscis.gov. They have information on it. It says the secretary may designate a country for TPS or temporary protection status due to the following temporary conditions: ongoing armed conflict, environmental extraordinary conditions, are not removable from the United States, cannot be detained by DHS, and can obtain an employment authorization. So they got a whole big long page about that, the TPS.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna just jump right in here and give my opinion. I think we need to apply that to everyone. We need to make everyone legal. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be full citizens, just like the people who were born here or who have been here forever. But we need to make them legal because we've got to come up with a way to make all of these people pay taxes, to make all of these people make a decent wage, because until we enforce a decent wage, there are going to be companies that are going to be bringing in illegal immigrants just to I mean, they're slaves. That's what they are. Is they're basically slaves.
You're
bringing them in.
You're bringing them in
to get them to work cheap. So
yeah.
we've got to come up with a system to recognize all 12 million of these people, and I don't mean by, you know, sending them home. We are spending money on them now, not as much I think as some people like to think we are, but on the same token, if we don't come up with a way to get the money back to them from them in taxes of some sort, then we're missing the point. Nobody disagrees with me.
Yeah. No, nobody does disagree with you. I certainly don't. Robin, what do you think on this idea?
Well, I agree with Cliff in a sense. We've created a problem by ignoring the situation, in my opinion. Like Cliff said, it's been an advantage to corporations and to us by having people come over here and work for sub-minimum wage, you know, slave labor, basically. And by turning our backs on this issue, you know, more and more people have crossed the border and set up lives here. And because we don't enforce it and we set up sanctuary cities, the population has got huge and it's gotten out of control. Now, you know, their kids and family is integrated into our society. They're in school. And if you were to just come out and strictly enforce the law right now, yeah, you're going to be separating, you're going to be breaking up families, you're going to be sending kids that don't even know anything but this country back home, and what type of life is that? So we have to make some provisions for our irresponsibility for not enforcing our laws.
Well, and we've got a major problem with the fact that the people who are, the children who are born in this country to parents who are not legally in this country, supposedly the children are now legal and the parents are not. We've got to do something to solve that problem. We've got to get the parents legal so that they can take care of these kids and we don't have these children that are in limbo somewhere.
Isn't that interesting? If you've got like a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old and maybe a 10-year-old thrown in there, they are all three legal and their parents are not. And if they had to go back to Mexico, when maybe the kids speak not a word of Spanish, you know.
Well, and they wouldn't be legal. They wouldn't be legal Mexican citizens either.
Gotcha. You bet.
So, you know, we'd have the opposite problem going back the other way. The parents would be legal and the children wouldn't. So we've got to come up with, there's got to be an equalization point here somewhere to allow these everybody to live harmoniously. I mean, there are people right here where I live that have children that are American citizens and have all the benefits, supposedly. And yet, because they're living with illegal aliens, I hate to use it. It's alien, it sounds like such a weird thing. I think of green people. But these kids live with illegal immigrants, and so they don't basically get all of the benefits because their parents are not allowed to take them to get the benefits or not allowed to ask for the benefits.
Yeah.
So until the kids grow up enough that they can do it on their own, they're stuck.
Yeah.
Well, and I agree with you on that. In fact, I put an article and give my blog a quick plug here. It's robinwonders.blogspot.com. I was commenting on an article where this same situation. The parents brought their child over here. I think he was 6 years old, and he grew up in the United States, and this is all he knows. And he's risked being deported because he got pulled over for a drunk driving because he's illegal. And so the question is, you know, first of all, what to do? First thing I think that the people that have come over here, they drug their child over here, at the very least, they should be charged with child abuse for putting their child into this type of, knowingly putting this child into their situation. But what I suggested on the blog, I'll just read that real quick here, is that because, like I said earlier, we contributed, everybody here contributed in creating the situation, that what they should do is that their immediate family only should be given the opportunity to apply for citizenship. This is the immediate family of the children that are here. and that have been here for a while. You just can't bring them over here. Apply for citizenship under the immigration regulations currently in place, which include speaking and reading English. Special allowances, of course, would be allowed for the elderly and others listed in the INS regulations.
I'm elderly.
Yeah, okay. Well, you don't have to speak English now. But the English requirement... We won't go there. And the English requirement could be waived. In other words, they have to earn the right to be here by making an effort to assimilate, not just, you know, here you are, congratulations, stamp, you're a citizen. Everyone else would have 1 year to return home and to apply for citizen visa or otherwise. In other words, you get back in line. After 1 year, we start getting tough on immigrations. Penalties for entering the country illegally. I know, I like science fiction too. Illegally.
I'm sorry.
Changes from being, and a lot of people don't know this, coming into this country illegally is simply a misdemeanor. It's a felony if you get deported to come back, but it should be changed from a misdemeanor to a felony with a possibility of imprisonment. And employers who hire people that don't have the right to work here should also face penalties and imprisonment. And that's my suggestion.
Well, the simple fact of the matter is that none of this can be fixed or repaired until we make everyone here legal. Because until we actually allow the people here to work and then impose wage constrictions so that they're not working for 25 cents an hour, until we do that, we're not going to have any control over what's going on right now. You do all of this. Just doing amnesty, okay, just allowing amnesty for the people that are here is only going to open the floodgates and make huge amounts of people coming in, even more than we have now, because this will be the second time now that I remember in recent time.
Reagan's
era. Because just a few years ago, we did an amnesty thing. And I was that just California or was that everywhere? I think it was everywhere.
I think that was Reagan that did that.
Okay. No, it was even later than then because I was living in California, I think, when we did that. And that was the 80s.
Well, anyways, we did that once. Yeah.
Yes. And the thing is, it's telling the world that, okay, go ahead. Go over there illegal. You can put up with it for a while, and then they'll make you a citizen. And we've got to do something about that. That's just sheer suicide. But we've got to equalize the wage differentiation between countries. And, of course, between the United States and Mexico is basically the country we're talking about. We don't have a lot of immigrants from Haiti. We have some from Haiti because it's fairly close, but you know, some of these other countries we don't worry too much about, but we're getting huge numbers from Mexico. We don't get the huge numbers from Canada because their country is financially and economically as well off or perhaps better in some instances than we are. But until we equalize Mexico, we're not going to stop this. So some way or another, we've got to equalize Mexico. See, part of it is our own corporations being greedy.
Yes.
Big corporations that need cheap wages, cheap labor. And they're, I know, whether you like to believe it or not, they're bringing these people in. And so until we start slapping huge fines and jail sentences and sort of all sorts of horrible things on these corporations when they get caught, and they are doing it now, and other people are getting very upset, but they're doing it the wrong way. They're going after the illegal citizens and sending them back and then breaking up families and doing this and that and the other. They need to go after the corporation itself, not the people that they've brought in to work for them.
Take the profit out of it, both for the corporations, and take the money out of it as the incentive to cross the border illegally.
Right.
Well,
the idea there would be to slap a huge fine per day on corporations that employ somebody illegally, employs an illegal alien, hit them with, a couple million dollars a day, you know, and make it retroactive to whenever they first put them to work for them. And when somebody has to pony up that kind of money, they're going to say, perhaps it's not cost-effective to employ illegals after all.
Well, that's true. And the other thing is enforcement. When I used to own my business, that's when they started requiring us to do an I-9 immigration form on all my employees, but nobody asked to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I just had to keep it in my file cabinet just in case, and I didn't have to verify it or anything like that. In fact, I've had, speaking of verification, I've had my Social Security number stolen twice. Most recently, my name got changed to Heidi.
Well, nice to meet you, Heidi.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Cliff.
That's one thing I've got going for me. If someone were to steal my identification and my Social Security number, all they'd end up with is bills. So probably they're not going to do that. There's no benefit to it when you steal mine. But the thing we've got to do is I have, okay, Tom, it's interesting the thing that you mentioned, and you were talking about huge fines. I think we need to do a formula for that because, you know, not all of these companies are that big. I think basically what we should do for a fine for these people is whatever illegal aliens we find working for them, they should be fined equal to the amount of money that they would have made at legitimate wages. So for every citizen that they're doing, this makes it a possibility for them to actually pay it. You make a $2 million fine for a company that doesn't make $2 million a year, and you know you're not going to get anywhere. You're being silly. So consequently, let's make it something that we could actually get. And then, like Robin says, let's try and enforce it. Let's actually do this and get the money from them some way, if nothing more than taking over the corporation or you know, I guess you can, you're not garnishing wages, but garnishing income or whatever you do to take the money away from them. There's got to be a way.
Well, like an example in Portland, Fresh Del Monte, I believe it was a year or 2 years ago, when they got raided, over half of the employee population was illegal. Well, of course, the corporation got fined, and I believe, I didn't hear the outcome of the case, but the two owners faced imprisonment. But the other thing that's interesting about that, too, is what happened the day after INS was done with them. A lot of the people they did not arrest, or the ones that they released, ran home, locked their doors, and left their kids at school. Children were brought home by the teachers, and the parents refused to answer the door because they were scared to.
Well, that's why we've got to do this amnesty thing and come up with an identification card or system for people who are immigrants but not here legally. I mean, we've got to have a partial legal, I mean, whatever you want to call it, and another thing we've got to be really careful with here, folks, is we're chasing some of the corporations out of our country. We're making it impossible for them to get along, and so they're going to go to other countries. They're going to move to Mexico,
mm-hmm.
The whole corporation. There's a lot of that going on. They just moved to Mexico. So.
Well, and I agree with you on that. And did you have a comment, Tom?
No, I was just he's right, of course, about the corporations moving to Mexico instead of just outsourcing jobs. They just take the whole thing, lock, stock, and secondary down to Mexico, and that's that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that's causing a problem, too, is I'll again refer to the state of Oregon. If you speak Spanish, the state of Oregon will pay you 5% more because you speak Spanish. Because they're bilingual. Of course, then again, the state of Oregon, no kidding, they actually try to create a job if you spoke Klingon as a Klingon interpreter. But,
oh, well, that would be important.
Yeah, that would be important. This is actually true. I wish I was making it up.
I understand.
But I have an article. This was dated in 06, and it's from, it's actually, we made it to a different state. This is Channel 7 Denver, Channel 7 News in Denver. But the article is, fire crew bosses who can't speak Spanish can lose their jobs. And
wow.
To summarize, Well, I'll just paraphrase this. It says that with 24 major wildfires burning across the southern United States, fire officials need every firefighter they can get. And they've done that in Oregon, but it created another problem. Officials are now having to lay off some bosses who manage those firefighting crews because the bosses are not bilingual. Many of the new hires in Oregon only speak Spanish. And they said that what we do know is 85% of the crew makeup is of Hispanic descent, according to Jim Walker, the Oregon Department of Forestry. The state said all the bosses must speak the same language of the crew on the fire lines for safety reasons. They need to be sure that the leader of the crews can quickly communicate during an emergency if the fire turns or if there's another problem. Now, the interesting thing about this article, and again, I'll just paraphrase it, is that one of the fire bosses who's been on the job for 15 years as a fire boss, if you had one person that spoke Spanish on his crew, he got demoted from fire boss.
You know, we're going to have to look at this a little more carefully than that. If we've hired a fire boss who doesn't have enough smarts to appoint an interpreter for him, then he shouldn't be the fire boss. Well, I mean, we don't need him to speak Spanish. We need him to find someone in his crew that can interpret for him, even if you have to pay him a couple bucks more or something. I mean, this problem can be solved without the boss actually having to speak Spanish.
Well, I disagree in this case, because if you're in an emergency situation, you don't have time to, say, tell Jose over there to translate what I'm saying, because we need the response now. But the point would be is that, again, we're still primarily English.
No, we're not.
We should be, if the requirement is English, we should hire people that speak the requirement for the job, not turn it around the other direction, which is becoming...
You just said that 80% of his crew was Hispanic.
But it didn't say that they were all didn't speak English.
Right, but if 80% of the crew, that's the majority of the crew, so he should have a Spanish boss. I mean, and I understand what you're talking about in case of an emergency, and it would be nice if he could speak Spanish, but there are ways around that. This business of firing people because they don't is just insane. We've got to, and it's also impractical to think that we're going to get all of these people to speak English. We need to do, and we are, in our schools and things, we do have a concerted effort to teach people to speak Spanish. We have classes that are, what do they call them, immersion classes or something like that? And this is a great idea and a great philosophy to do, but this isn't going to happen overnight. But the idea of firing people who are not bilingual, that doesn't solve the problem either.
But if you're here legally, as one of the requirements is, and I can give you the INS code for everything, you have to have a basic understanding to be able to read and speak English. If you're going to assimilate into this country, you have to know English. I am so sick and tired of going and applying for a job that I'm fully qualified for, except I don't speak Spanish. You know, like for delivering auto parts, Spanish speaking required. Why?
Right.
If this is America, this is the United States, we the primary language here is still English, although you wouldn't know that anymore.
And how many times have we tried to make it legal, and it hasn't been? It is not.
Oh yeah, make it
legal
the official language. Yeah.
The official language.
Right,
and it's still not. I mean, that's if we're really interested in actually doing this, then see, we as citizens are the ones that are falling down on the job. We have not spoken and made it imperative. We've got to get it put on the ballot. We've got to get it passed to make English the official language. And until we do, the time, money, and effort spent to make all of these, to teach all of these people to speak English, I guess is the word, is not going to be spent.
Well, let them spend on themselves. If I go move to France, I'm going to learn.
It's going
to
happen.
I'm going to learn French, or I'm not going to, you know, they're not going to cater to me. So if they want to come over here, let them take the effort to learn English. The problem is, though, and I think there's an NBC News report that they were interviewing this gal that was here over 15 years, and she didn't speak a lick of English, and they asked her, why not? She says, first of all, I don't have to. In her little Spanish community in the U.S., she doesn't have to. And secondly, she felt that it was an insult to her to speak English, which I think if it's an insult, go home. What are you doing here?
Well, I agree with you, unfortunately, but that's not going to change what's happening. And as far as coming here, the incentive to be here and make the money is far greater than the incentive to be embarrassed or to not understand what's going on. There are always ways around working around the language. I mean, look at people who don't read. I've known the people who can't read, who yet are, you know, own businesses and are doing very well in society because they've got a word around it. So there are ways around the system of speaking English. I've been in several other countries, and I'm one of these people. I've tried to learn a different language, and I'm horrible at it. I just can't do it. I know a few words and a few languages, and that's it. And I really wanted to learn. I was in Turkey. And I really, really wanted to learn Turkish. And I took classes. I bought a book. I took classes. I was in the military, and they offered a class. I took that and went through the thing, and still I don't know how to speak Turkish. And it's very unfortunate because it's a fantastic country, and I would like to be able to know more about it from the people, not just reading it in a book somewhere. It's a little different when you're actually there and talking to the people. But again, I got along because in Turkey, as in almost everywhere in the world now, they're teaching their young people to speak English in school.
Right.
So I just go grab kids off the street and convince them to, you know, pay them a buck and have them become my interpreter. And I've never had a problem doing that in any country.
Well, and speaking of that, I had a friend of mine went to LCC, Lane Community College in Eugene, and took a Spanish course. And by the middle of the course, the instructor said, "You are all failing." So I had a friend of mine, actually I have a couple friends that are from Mexico, so Spanish is their first language, and I asked if they would help her with her homework. And they looked at this and says, "I have no clue what they're trying to say to you." So in other words, the Spanish that they were speaking is not the common Spanish that's used in the community.
Well, that is another problem in a great many countries. Their languages are so diverse, even worse than ours, that it's hard to get along.
Right.
They can't even talk to each other from one end of the country to the other, let alone.
That breaks up the country. But I agree with you. Take the financial incentive out of it. Use E-Verify for one to verify that you have the legal right to be in the country in the first place, to work, the legal right to work, because that is the law. Take the financial incentive out of it. Find the employers that do hire people that, you know, don't have the right to work here, and just basically just start enforcing the law.
Well, that's we've got a lot of problems in our country because we don't bother to enforce the law.
Yeah, really. Unfortunately, I've got some things going on, so I'm going to have to bail on this deal. But you guys have an interesting discussion going on, and I would certainly encourage anybody who's listening to jump on the phone and call up and get involved in the conversation.
Well, thank you very much, and appreciate your calling in.
Yes, right, appreciate it, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
All right.
And just in case you didn't know, it's 646-721 9887 646-721-9887 is the telephone number. You can give us a call and become a part of the conversation. Tell us about how to get in on the chat room, Robin.
You can get on the chat room by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN, or you can send us an email right now at talk@KRBNradio.com. You can also, if you have any ideas or suggestions for a future show, we would like to hear from you.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know what anybody wants to talk about because, and as a matter of fact, it's interesting too because the idea of Blog Talk Radio, which is a spectacular thing that is available right now, we can actually schedule a show at any time. So if there's a point where you would like to put a program together and you can't be here at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, let us know. We can work out another time that's convenient to you so we can all get together and discuss this. Then it goes into the archives on Blog Talk Radio, and an awful lot of people listen to those archives. It's very convenient, and I think we'll have more and more. This is, in my opinion, the way radio is going to go, the way the whole nation, the world is going to go, is this internet radio thing and internet everything, for that matter. But this is a great starting point, and I'm really appreciative of Blog Talk Radio for them putting this together.
And this is coming from somebody who spent a career, lifetime career, in terrestrial radio, kicking and screaming about going to internet radio. So that says a lot, folks, about, you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
If Cliff can do it.
You just can't teach me a language.
That's true. But also, if you've never called a talk show before, as our last caller, Tom, it is painless. You'll live through it, trust me. And we're more than happy to have your call. So again, if you'd like to give us a call, our number right now is 646-721-9887. And we got another.
Well, basically, back we do what?
Oh, we did. I was just going to say we got another 23 minutes in the show for your phone calls if you want to call in.
I thought we were going to have another caller. I would like to see how the chat room works. Somebody get a hold of us in the chat room and see how that goes. That would be interesting to see what takes place there, too. This is all new to us, too, folks, so it's been kind of interesting. Anyway, back to immigration. The thing we've got to do is immigration is going to be a problem, simply going to be a problem, until we equalize somewhat the wages between the two countries of us and Mexico or any other a third world country. Mexico is not a third world country. Why are their wages so low, and why are ours so high? This whole economic downturn, this whole economic crash, I guess you call it, that happened last year, is, I think, a starter point for equalizing wages and work ethics and everything else between all the different countries of the world, because it's not just our country that has this problem with that. It's everybody. Everybody has this problem. And so...
Well, to be clear, just as somebody said, we're not being racist, Mexico is not the only illegal immigration coming into the country. It just happens to be the largest number currently.
It's the easiest to do.
It's easiest to do. But also, that said, too, from what I understand about Mexico, it's resource rich. But unfortunately, from what I'm hearing, is just that it may have good resources. It's actually got some wealth over there. But the living conditions that they're most people in over there are not very good.
Well, that's because their wages are so low as compared to here and as compared to everywhere. So that's what we've got to do. We've got to work on bringing up the living conditions in Mexico. And I'm gonna get in big trouble now. I'm bringing down the living conditions in the United States.
No, but you bring up a good point, though. With the millions that have come over here, what if instead of trying to change our country and change our culture over here, why not if they got together as a group and worked on changing their own country?
Well, they sort of are doing that, because Mexican people, everyone that I've ever met, is almost unanimously sending huge amounts of money back to Mexico for their families to live.
Right.
And it's making a huge difference. I'm sure that the amount of money being flowing from the United States back to Mexico is extremely large, and it has to be making a huge difference on the Mexican economy, just that itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing we've got to worry about, though, again, is why we've got to worry about what our companies, our industry and such moving to Mexico. And that's, I mean, we've had a lot of people do that, a lot of people already. I mean, one of the big holdouts, and one of the ones that I remember because it was always in an industry that I was always interested in, is television, Zenith. Zenith moved to Mexico because they couldn't build their televisions here. at a reasonable price to be able to sell them. The other televisions were coming from Japan at that time, and so they just moved to Mexico. They didn't go to Japan. They just moved to Mexico and did quite well competing with Japan. Now, of course, Japan has actually put themselves in much the same position as the United States, and so even in Japan, things, you know, it used to be made in Japan was a real stigma on a product. Now it's not made in Japan because Japanese can't make it cheap enough either. So now it's made in Hong Kong or Taiwan or someplace like that. So slowly but surely, all of these countries are equalizing themselves. But for some reason or other, Mexico isn't doing it. What have we got to look at? Somebody's got to sit down and spend a huge amount of time and money analyzing what's going on. What's going on between us and Mexico, and where is it falling down?
Well,
or is it?
Well, I'll give you a good example. And it's an estimated 12 million. You know, I don't know what the current numbers are. I don't know if anybody does. But when you have a large populace moving out of a country, it kind of creates a demand on the workforce over there, and so they can offer cheaper labor.
I would think if they were all moving away, they'd have to be more expensive because it'd be harder to find people to work.
Well, okay.
But there aren't that many. There aren't that many moving out of their country.
Well, okay, I'll give you that one. I was thinking opposite, but yeah, it is diluting. It is diluting the workforce over here, though. But the countries, in this country here especially, it's becoming so expensive for a corporation, and there's so many regulations, which I think is another reason why some of the big businesses are moving across the border is because of regulations. Well, I'll give an example right now, EPA regulations. That's a whole other show, but California, for example, hates diesel. And the company I was working for this year is having to revamp all of their reefer trailers just to be able to go into California, because it wouldn't pass the EPA standards over there. And that's a huge expense to go ahead and revamp 1,000 trailers.
Oh, yeah, and you're right. We are having a problem with the EPA, so to speak. I mean, you know, it used to be, you know, we talk about tree huggers and we talk about this, but we are getting, in my opinion, a little bit carried away. I understand, but we're putting our own people out of business and out of work because of it, and we need to reconsider that. And there's a big, huge fight going on about handling that part of our society and our government. But again, is that voted on? Did they vote about that in California, or did somebody just decide to do that?
I think it was just they just decided to do that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens on the 26th and see who decides to do what in the state of Oregon about the new tax. I wonder if a new tax is going to be implemented in Oregon. There's an awful lot of people spending money on that, huge amounts of money. I don't know where and why they're coming up with it, but huge amounts of money, especially now that it's getting closer. It's also interesting that the way that we do elections in this state, that most of the people have already voted,
right,
even though it's not time yet.
Well, and the thing I found interesting, and I don't want to get off topic here too much, is we just went ahead and filed our taxes, and Oregon is not going to process your tax refund until after the 1st of February, depending on how the election turns out, which I find is interesting because they're saying, well, this doesn't affect anybody that makes under $250. Right. But anyways, I want to get back to the topic on here.
Well, simple thing is, I don't think it's going to affect anybody.
Probably not.
I don't think it's going to pass. How many times have they tried to do that?
But I wanted to touch on for a moment the Obama administration, their stance on illegal immigration, while we're talking about it. And in a presidential summary release on the White House website, by the way, under Issues Immigration, part of the thing that Obama is pushing for is stronger border control by investing in additional personnel, infrastructure, and technology, and also our ports of entry. He says we should improve our immigration system referring to that it is dysfunctional, immigration bureaucracy, and he would like to enable legal immigration so families can stay together. I got a comment on that after this. Remove the incentives to enter illegally. And like we've been talking about earlier, take the financials out of it. Bring people out of the shadows to allow undocumented immigrants who are in good standing to pay fines, learn English, and go back in line for the opportunity to become citizens and
well, this whole business of going back in line is totally absurd. The line is so long, you're never going to get there.
True.
Back in line, it's, you know, and this is in almost every country that I've ever heard about. The line is so long that there's never going to be legal immigration until you're like 90 years old. So that's why they don't go back in line.
But why reward them for cutting in front?
Well, the simple fact of the matter, okay, now you mentioned the fact that we should strengthen the borders and bring, you know, more people and build fences or whatever strengthening the borders does.
Right.
What one thing it does, and regardless of how you decide you should do it or what you should decide you should do, the one thing that's common amongst them all is we're going to spend millions of dollars doing it now.
Right.
Then he says that we need to equalize the wages so that we get rid of the incentive for them to come across the border. Okay, we're doing two opposite things there. Forget about doing anything to the border. Forget about strengthening the border, about spend that money to get rid of the incentive, because that's the only way you're actually going to work on it. That's the only way it's going to happen, is get to change the incentive. Come up with a way that there's no incentive to come here.
Yeah, I agree, but I disagree in the fact that we're not going to – this is a huge problem. And one of the first things we need to do is we need to stop the influx. In other words, shut off the pipe, so to speak, so we can fix the
it's
problem.
It's not going to happen.
Not
it's
under a
not
system until we take it seriously.
Not under any system. Until you equalize and make a reason for the – no longer have a reason, it's not going to happen. You can build a huge, giant fence all the way across there, and they're going to find ways to go up in airplanes and jump out of airplanes and parachutes or something. There's going to be ways to do it.
Right.
They're already digging tunnels.
That's just the first line of defense. The second line of defense is you come over here, and we check your ID, and we don't hire you because you're not supposed to be over here. That takes away right there the financial incentive to come over here, unless you're going to do underground stuff.
We already have these laws in effect. All we have to do is start enforcing what's
them.
There.
I agree. We don't need new laws.
Right. And we don't need to spend money on the new laws. We don't need to spend money on the border. What we need to do is spend money on enforcing what's here and coming up with more equalization. I mean, And as if it requires, to begin with, if it requires giving amnesty to all of the people that are here illegally and turning them into legally here, now I don't mean giving them all the benefits or everything else, but turning them into at least legally being able to pursue the benefits. Because, see, as illegal aliens or illegal immigrants, I got to start using that word. I got to stop this alien word. If you're illegal, you don't have an opportunity to do anything. We should at least give them the opportunity to pursue some sort of equalization.
And I got no problem with that. I just don't want it to be a rubber stamp where, okay, you've been under the radar for 10 years. Boom, you're now a citizen with all the rights and everything that goes along with it. I want you to put in an effort to assimilate into the country, into our culture.
Exactly. It's got to be a way. And there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way. Because sending them all back, first of all, we're not going to get to send them all back.
No, it's
second
not.
Second of all, before we get them all back, they're all going to be coming back here. So.
Well, and on that line, too, one of the, let's see if I can find it here real quick, the percentages of the children that are over here. Of course, I had a bookmark. I can't find it.
Well, probably the first thing we should do is eliminate that law that says if they're born in the United States, they're citizens. No other country has that. I mean, that's a silly law. If they're born in the United States, they're citizens. That's one huge incentive for them to come here and have kids.
Yeah, I think that's the Fourth Amendment, if I remember right. And there's controversy over the language out of that. But the anyway, I just found the article, and this is from the Pew Research Center. And it says right now that Hispanics are the largest and youngest minority group in the United States. One in five school children is Hispanic. One in four newborns is Hispanic, is what they're talking about. And again, I'm not trying to be racist towards Hispanic. That's just the population as it is right now. They're also saying, well, I was going to go on a different subject. I won't bring that up at the moment. But it's, to get back to the point, it has become a problem that is just so big.
Well, unless we get ready to start putting together huge orphanages to take care of these kids, we got to worry about their parents too.
I agree, because these children, this is all they know over here. That's why I say that, you know, it's irresponsible for people to drag their children into a foreign country illegally and place them in a situation where they could. Number one, they could be deported at any time. They currently, a lot of the times, can't go to college. They have to, you know, basically just do like any other illegal. But this is the only country they know.
And it's an interesting situation in that I know a young man, child, whatever, he's like 15, 16, something like that. Mm-hmm. But he was born in the United States.
Right.
He has never been to Mexico. Doesn't know anything about Mexico, but he just barely speaks English.
Yeah.
Now, he's been through the entire school system all his life in the United States, but he still just barely speaks English. The reason I know this is because the kid used to come over to my house. He could talk to me without feeling embarrassed, and he talked about the different things that are going on. He wanted to know more about the politics. He wanted to know more about the society. He wanted to know more about what American is, but his parents still to this day, and actually I think he has brothers that are older than him, but at least 16 years that they've lived in this country, and they know nothing. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. They're illegal. They're afraid to go out. They're afraid to sign up for anything. They're afraid to learn anything. They can't go to school. But so they just sit at home and speak their native language to the kid who what little English he's gotten, and he does speak English, and most people are not going to be too cognizant of the fact that he doesn't understand half of what they're saying. But what he's learned is through the public school system, which is, pardon my English, piss poor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to ask, because he did go through the school system, correct?
And he's graduating and doing well in school, but still doesn't understand half of what he's being told or heard.
Then I'll agree with you with that, is that's a failure on our schools, especially in one of the issues that's been brought up. I don't have any data in front of me on this one, is they said a lot of languages can be taught in 1 to 3 years to where you are functional in the community.
Right.
But our school system is dragging it out that even after 3 years, they still are not having a proficiency in it.
Well, see, technically speaking, I guess if you were talking to this kid, he would be functional. I mean, he gets along fine, and most of the people in the community don't realize he doesn't understand half of what they're talking about,
right. Because
he doesn't put on. I mean, he's not dumb. He's a very smart kid, but he doesn't understand what's going on because he doesn't understand the language that well. And it's not because he doesn't want to. You can see that he, some kids are lazy and just don't want to learn and are being forced. Well, that's not the case for this kid. He would like to learn, but a couple of things, of course, that are a problem. You don't dare go out and admit to everybody you're stupid, because here you are, a stupid Mexican, you know. And unfortunately, there is a prejudice in this country about that at this point,
yeah.
Still. And then the other thing is if you don't do that, and of course, you've got peer pressure. You've got to be a little bit careful with that. But it's a problem for him, and it's really a problem. I'm sure he's not the only one in the world that has this same kind of a problem. So we've got to work hard on teaching the English language in our schools, and I agree with that. But again, you're spending the money there that you could be spending somewhere else.
Okay.
And who do you spend it on? Who do you spend it on? But these kids are legal citizens by the definition of our laws.
Well, and you remind me of a situation when I was in college a couple of years ago. This one girl, I think she was like 19 to 25 years old. Figures. When probably early 20s, I would say, that she came to class crying. And the reason why she was crying is she's of Spanish descent, or mixing Hispanic descent. And the reason why she was crying is because she just walked by the cafeteria, or through the cafeteria, and she said everybody was just gleaming at her, talking. They knew that they were talking about her. They thought she was an illegal alien. And
uh-huh.
she's not.
Mm-hmm.
But because mm-hmm. of the stigma mm-hmm. of it, she's feeling the pressure from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, and there's one of the problems, too, because, you know, one of the problems with this young man and other people of the same descent that I know, but one of his problems is his parents are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody assumes he is.
Right.
But he's not. He was born in the United States and has never, ever been to Mexico, never gone anywhere. In fact, he's never been out of the state of Washington, to be honest with you. But, well, until I brought him to Oregon. But anyway.
That's a perfect scenario. Here's a kid. He was brought over here very young age, right?
He
was born here by illegal parents who risk getting deported any time. His family, if it happens, he'll be separated from his family.
Right, right.
You know, and
of course, that's scary when you're a young kid. I mean, he's 15, 16 years old. Well, actually, he's older now, but when I last talked to him. You know, it's scary when you're young that your parents are going to get sent away.
Mm-hmm.
But now he could get along on his own, I'm sure. But it's still harder for him to get a job or to do things because of the fact that he's Mexican, basically. I mean, he's one young man that looks very Mexican, and it's obvious. And because of the fact that his parents don't speak English, sounds Mexican.
Well, in the last minute of the show, take the situation that, let's say, he was brought over here at 2 years old, which makes him illegal. This is the only country he knows, and when he gets to be 18, he risks being deported to, say, Mexico or what other foreign country where he never been to, doesn't speak the language, doesn't know anything about it.
Well, see, in this case, he does speak the language.
No, but I'm saying
I'm saying
in this scenario, in this example,
right.
You know, if he was brought over here at 2 years old, this is the only country he knows, and because at that point he's illegal. And some of them don't even know that they're illegal.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And they get sent over to a country that they have no clue and are expected to try and function. I mean, that's almost just sending them to prison.
I think we're being told.
Yeah, I think we're being told kind of loud here.
Really? Well, anyway, it's been a great show, Robin, and I appreciate you inviting me aboard. We'll be back again next time. Do it again.
Yeah, we'll be back again next Saturday at this time, 10 o'clock Pacific. And again, if you have a comment or a show suggestion, be sure to email us at talk@krbnradio.com. We'll be very happy to hear from you.
And we will get back to you.
We will get back to you. We actually do read the emails, believe it or not. Even if you don't believe it, do it anyways.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So until next week, it's been a pleasure, Cliff, and we'll see you all next week.
Absolutely. I really look forward to doing it again next week. Have a good day.
Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin. sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at